Welcome to the deep dive. Have you ever watched a supposedly brilliant AI agent just totally fail at a basic task?
Oh, absolutely. Like you ask it something simple and it just starts hallucinating your response or it gets stuck in this endless loop.
Right, and usually it's simply because it couldn't actually reach out and, touch your live data. It's isolated. So today, our mission is to solve that exact problem for you. We're decoding the actual blueprint for orchestrating multi-server AI agents.
Which is such an exciting space right now.
It really is. The material we're looking at today is this highly technical course chapter from April 2026. It's focused on the Claude Agent SDK. Specifically, it breaks down this incredibly powerful mechanism called the MCP connector, or the Model Context Protocol.
Yep, the MCP.
Right. And we're going to figure out how to securely and reliably connect your AI to real-world tools, databases, APIs, enterprise software.
Which honestly is a massive shift in how we build these systems. I mean, Anthropic actually co-developed this open protocol with the broader ecosystem back in 2024.
It was pretty rough back then, right?
Oh, totally. In those early days, wiring it up felt like, I don't know, stringing together this fragile workaround. It was clunky. But what we're looking at in this April 2026 architectural blueprint, it's just a completely different landscape. Following the Agent SDK rename, the MCP connector shipped as a first-class feature. Yeah, it's no longer a hack. It is the official, structurally supported way to integrate external environments into your agent's workflow.
Okay, let's unpack this physically for a second because I think an analogy helps here. Imagine your AI agent is like a world-class chef, an absolute culinary genius.
Okay, I like where this is going.
But they're trapped inside a completely empty concrete room. There's no knives, no stoves, no ingredients, just the genius with literally no physical agency.
Red brain in a jar.
Exactly. And up until recently, developers were essentially cutting holes in the wall and tossing individual ingredients in one by one.
Which is terribly inefficient.
Right. So the MCP connector acts as this automated, highly secure logistics pipeline. It delivers custom-built kitchens, specialized appliances, fresh data pipelines, all directly to that chef on demand, the exact millisecond they're needed.
That's a perfect way to look at it. But before the chef can use these appliances, we actually have to physically build the logistics pipeline.
Right, the plumbing.
Exactly, the plumbing. And the architecture defines three specific transport modes for how these tools actually travel into the execution environment. And understanding the plumbing is critical.
Because if you don't understand the plumbing, you can't orchestrate a multi-server agent.
Spot on. You have to understand the latency and connection rules of the servers involved. So the first transport type, and honestly the one developers use most often for local development or like community published NPM packages, is Steedio.
Steedio, standard input, standard output.
You got it. And what's interesting here is the SDK isn't actually making a network request. It is literally spawning a local child process on the host machine.
Okay, so wait. The AI process sends a JSON string out through its standard output stream,
Yep.
and then the child process ingests it through its standard input stream. So if it's directly piping data through standard I/O streams like that,
Yeah.
that inherently means both the agent and the tool server have to be running on the exact same physical machine, or at least the same container.
Yes, exactly. Which immediately explains why we need the second transport mode.
Which is HTTP, right?
Right. Because if I need my agent to pull data from a massive cloud-hosted enterprise CRM, I'm definitely not running that locally. I need a stateless remote connection.
Makes total sense. The agent fires off a standard API call to a web endpoint, gets the response, and then just closes the connection. Standard stateless stuff.
Precise deduction. You use Sedeo for local compute and HTTP for stateless remote execution. But
Here we go.
then we have the third transport mode, which is SSE, server sent events.
Okay, I'm gonna push back on this one a little bit.
Go for it.
I mean, I intellectually understand spinning up a local process, and I totally get stateless cloud APIs. But why introduce a completely different streaming protocol? Like, if I need a remote server to send me real-time updates, why not just use WebSockets? Or just have the agent repeatedly pull the HTTP endpoint?
Because polling a server constantly burns through execution cycles and your token windows, which, gets incredibly expensive very fast.
Fair enough. But what about WebSockets?
Well, WebSockets are bidirectional, right? Which is honestly often overkill. It introduces all this complex state management that you just don't need. Server sent events are unidirectional. They only go from the remote server to the client.
Oh, I see.
Imagine your AI needs to execute a massive multi-table database query that takes like 4 minutes to run. or maybe it needs to monitor a live feed of incoming customer support tickets.
Right, standard HTTP would just time out, the connection would drop.
Exactly. Yeah. But with SSE, the remote server holds the connection open and just pushes real-time event updates to the agent as the data processes. And here's the kicker. What makes this architecture so robust is that the SDK handles the SSE reconnection completely transparently.
Wait, really? Meaning if there's a network blip and the TCP connection drops, the developer doesn't have to write custom logic to catch the error?
Yep.
They don't have to re-authenticate and resume the stream?
Not at all. The SDK just absorbs the failure and reconnects behind the scenes. Yeah. That's the magic of it being a first-class feature now. It abstracts all that network fragility away from the developer.
Wow. Okay, so we have our physical pipelines, local child processes, stateless cloud APIs, and remote streaming events. But here's where the architecture gets brilliantly strict.
Yes.
Once those pipelines deliver the tools into our hypothetical kitchen, how does the system universally identify them? The documentation mandates this incredibly rigid, uncompromising naming convention.
It really does. Every single tool, no matter where it came from, must be formatted with a specific prefix. It's MCP underscore underscore, then the server name underscore underscore, and the tool name.
Notice those are double underscores.
Double underscores. Very important. And that prefix is not just some, you know, stylistic suggestion for clean code. It is a strict namespace constraint.
Right. So, for example, if you configure a GitHub server in your environment and internally you just name that server GitHub and it possesses a tool to list repository issues.
The agent visible identifier in the execution environment becomes MCP GitHub list issues. And if it can create an issue, it's MCP GitHub create issue.
Which, if that naming convention defines the namespace, it has to be tied directly to security, right?
Oh, 100%.
Because we're piping incredibly dangerous tools into this environment. Live production databases, code repositories, payment gateways. We have to establish a hard boundary between what the AI can logically see and what it is physically authorized to touch.
Otherwise, one badly phrased prompt and the agent drops a critical database table.
Exactly. Which brings us to the security architecture,
yeah.
Specifically this concept of allowed tools. And from what I read, this is where developers make the single biggest production mistake when deploying these systems.
It's terrifying how common this mistake is. When configuring an agent, there's a setting called permission mode. And a lot of developers, you know, they set their permission mode to accept edits and then just walk away. They assume they've just granted the agent this blanket universal auto-approval to use literally any tool it finds.
But they haven't.
No.
They really haven't. If we think about this as a segmented security clearance, setting the mode to accept edits is like giving a house sitter a badge or a key that lets them walk into the front door and maybe water the plants. They can execute local file system, bash commands, they can edit text files. But those MCP tools, the GitHub access, the Postgres database, those are locked inside a vault in the basement.
Right. The front door key does not open the vault.
It's a completely segmented execution sandbox.
Exactly what it is. Anthropic deliberately walled off external MCP tools from that base level local permission setting. If an agent with accept edits enabled tries to invoke that GitHub issue tool we talked about, the SDK's internal interceptor will flat out block the execution. It'll just throw an unauthorized error.
So how do you actually let it use the tool?
You have to explicitly grant access using that strict namespace convention. You have to declare MCP ithib asterisk inside your allowed tools array.
The wildcard asterisk. So that acts as the key to the entire GitHub server vault.
Yep. Or, you know, if a developer is practicing the principle of least privilege, they could restrict it to a single specific function. They could only grant mectipithipithist issues.
So then the agent could read the repo, but if it tried to commit code, it would just hit a wall.
Exactly.
Mm.
And the documentation grabs developers by the collar here with a severe warning about a setting called bypass permissions.
Uh-oh. That sounds dangerous.
Because it is. When developers are prototyping and they keep hitting those unauthorized errors because they misconfigure their namespace grants, they get so frustrated they just look for a shortcut. So they flip bypass permissions to true.
Let me guess. Doing that doesn't just open the vault, it basically fires the security guards and dismantles the entire alarm system.
It disables every single safety check embedded in the SDK. Yes, it auto-approves all your MCP tools, but it simultaneously disables the critical approval prompts for destructive bash operations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You are literally handing a non-deterministic AI model root-level execution access to your host machine without a single guardrail in place. It is a catastrophic security risk for any production environment.
Okay, so do not use bypass permissions.
Yeah.
Got it. So the pipes are connected, the strict namespace is defined, and our permissions are locked down into a segmented sandbox. But if we solve the security problem, we immediately run into a massive performance bottleneck.
Yes, the context window issue.
Right. Let's say a developer wires up four different enterprise servers, say a database, a CRM, a code repo, and a document storage system. Combined, those servers expose, I don't know, 200 distinct tools.
That's a lot of tools.
Right. And if the SDK injects the JSON definitions, the instructions, and the parameters for all 200 tools into the AI's context window every single time the user sends a prompt, that's going to cause a severe latency spike.
Oh, it would degrade performance entirely. The model would just burn through thousands of tokens just reading the instruction manuals for tools it doesn't even need for that specific task.
So how does the April 2026 update handle this?
It includes a mechanism called Tool Search. It operates under the hood and is actually enabled by default. Tool Search prevents that poke and bloat by utilizing vector similarity search. Instead of dumping a massive list of schemas into the active context window, it fundamentally changes how the tools are stored and retrieved.
Let's break down the mechanics of that vector search, because we aren't just talking about a basic keyword lookup, right? It's not just hitting sutrol plus F for the word database.
No, no, it's mathematical. The SDK takes the user's prompt and translates it into a vector embedding.
Which is like a complex array of numbers that represents the semantic meaning and intent of the request.
Exactly. And it's already done that same mathematical translation for the names and descriptions of all 200 tools. So when a request comes in, the system calculates the geometric distance between the prompt's vector and the tool vectors in a high-dimensional space.
Okay, so it's acting like a hyper-intelligent librarian. Like, if I ask the agent to check the status of the Q3 marketing deliverables, the librarian understands the conceptual shape of that request. It maps that shape to the tool descriptions, pulls only the specific project management and document retrieval tools that mathematically align with that concept, and dynamically injects just those three schemas into the context window.
While the other 187 tools stay perfectly hidden in the warehouse.
That is remarkably efficient.
It really is.
Yeah.
It keeps the context window incredibly clean, saves a massive amount of token costs, and honestly, most importantly, it prevents the model from hallucinating by trying to use irrelevant tools that just happen to share a keyword.
That's brilliant. But mathematically hiding tools dynamically introduces a completely new, incredibly frustrating debugging nightmare.
Yes, the silent failures.
Right. If tools are intentionally withheld from the context window and a server connection breaks, the agent doesn't know it's missing a tool. It just sits there, completely oblivious, failing to execute the task. The failure is completely silent.
And invisible errors are the absolute hardest to catch. This is where developers have to dig into the telemetry. When troubleshooting these silent failures, you have to intercept and inspect the system message object.
System message, okay.
Specifically, you're looking for a subtype labeled init. This initialization message fires before the agent attempts any actual cognitive work. And inside that message payload, there's an MSAP servers array, and every connected server reports a discrete status field.
Mm.
If a pipe is broken, that payload is literally the only place the architecture will explicitly tell you.
Wow. Okay, so what if I'm using that first transport mode, Stadio, and I'm spawning local child processes? My biggest fear there is the package manager. Let's say the SDK is trying to spin up a server using an NPX package. If that package isn't installed locally, what happens to the connection?
Well, it triggers the Stadio connection timeout, which defaults to exactly 60 seconds. If the SDK realizes the NPX package isn't available locally, it reaches out to the NPM registry to download and install it on the fly.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. If you're on a slow network connection, downloading and unpacking a heavy node package easily blows past that 60-second threshold. The child process hangs, the handshake fails, and the agent just silently drops the tool.
So the architectural fix is to completely eliminate the startup latency by pre-warming the cache. You have to globally install those packages on the host machine before you ever initialize the agent, so the child process can spawn in milliseconds.
Exactly. That solves the local timeout issue. But the remote HTTP and SSE servers, they introduce entirely different silent failure modes at the network layer.
Like what?
We're talking about missing course headers, blocking cross-origin requests, invalid SSL certificates terminating the handshake, malformed database connection URLs.
And what about authentication? That's got to be the most complex network layer failure. Let's say I'm connecting to a cloud-hosted CRM that requires OAuth2 authentication. The technical blueprint is incredibly clear that the agent SDK will absolutely not handle the OAuth redirect flow for you.
Nor could it. Think about the mechanics of an OAuth2 flow. It requires popping open a browser window, rendering a third-party login screen, the human entering credentials, clicking an authorize button, and then the server redirecting back to a callback URL.
And an AI agent loop is a headless backend process.
Exactly. It has no graphical interface. It cannot click buttons in a browser.
So the developer must construct a separate application layer to physically handle the user interaction, complete the oath exchange, securely capture the final bearer token, and then manually inject that token into the MCP server configuration via HTTP headers.
Right. The agent just consumes the token. It doesn't negotiate it.
And the same logic applies to token refreshing, I assume.
Yep. If the token expires mid-session, the agent loop will just start throwing unauthorized errors. The developer has to build the session initialization logic to monitor and refresh those tokens completely outside of the agent's cognitive loop.
Man, managing all those tokens, database URLs, and API keys across multiple servers, that creates a massive configuration headache. You definitely don't want to hard code production secrets directly into your initialization scripts.
Which is why the blueprint outlines a project level configuration file called .mcp.datjson.
Right, the .mcp.json file. And what makes this file brilliant isn't just that it centralizes the server list, it's how it handles injection. Mm-hmm. It securely expands environment variables, you know, using the $ and curly brace syntax, like $ curly brace database URL at the exact moment the agent loads.
It acts as a declarative manifest. You keep your credentials securely injected from the host machine's environment, meaning your version-controlled code stays entirely clean and compliant.
That's great. Okay, so we've built the physical pipes, we locked down the segmented namespace, we optimized the token window with vector search, and mapped out the network layer debugging. We basically have a fully operational multi-server architecture. But what does this massive orchestration engine actually look like when deployed in a real-world enterprise scenario?
Oh, this is the best part. The documentation points to a major release from May 2026 called the SMB Workflow Pattern.
SMB Workflow.
Yeah. This is a specialized suite of enterprise-grade MCP connectors integrated through Claude Cowork, specifically targeting complex, multi-platform business operations. It includes native tool integration for financial platforms like QuickBooks and PayPal, CRM giants like HubSpot and Salesforce, and even document generation via Canva and DocuSign.
And here is the core mathematical advantage of this architecture: synchronized coordination. We aren't just building an AI that can read a PayPal API. We are building an execution environment where a single unified query can ripple across entirely disjointed systems.
Exactly. The blueprint highlights this automated payment reconciliation workflow. An agent can pull a raw settlement report from the PayPal server, analyze those line items, cross-reference and reconcile that data against the general ledger in the QuickBooks server, identify the matching client invoice, and then instantly fire a payload to the HubSpot server to update a sales pipeline status to deal one.
That's incredible. It is executing the cognitive and mechanical workload of an entire operations team in a matter of seconds. And it works seamlessly because the MCP connector forces all of these proprietary enterprise APIs into a standardized semantic language that the reasoning engine can manipulate.
And to prove the reliability of this standardization, the course chapter challenges you to build a specific hands-on application.
Right, I saw that. You have to wire up three deeply incompatible environments into a single agent. First, a local Postgres database routed through a Stadio child process. Second, a private GitHub repository also mounted via Stadio. And third, a live documentation feed from Claude Code pulling via a remote HTTP connection.
Three separate tools operating across two different transport protocols. And the execution task is highly complex. The agent must pull a specific bug report from the GitHub issue queue, query the Postgres database to extract the historical transaction logs related to that user, and synthesize a technical summary that explicitly cites the remote Claude Code documentation on how to resolve the underlying bug.
All at the same time. It pulls code context, database history, and live documentation simultaneously, without dropping a connection or hallucinating a tool. This fundamentally changes the baseline definition of application development.
It really does.
You are no longer writing rigid procedural API glue code to move data from point A to point B. You are orchestrating a fluid, intelligent middle layer, supplying it with an array of highly specialized tools, and letting the reasoning engine dynamically calculate the most efficient path to the solution.
It is a profound shift in developer mindset. You transition from being a mechanic who manually tightens every bolt in a data pipeline to an architect who designs the infrastructure for autonomous problem solving.
Right.
Mastering this orchestration layer is how you eliminate manual operational busy work entirely.
But, and this is where I want to leave things today, there is one specific strange detail buried in the blueprint that I cannot stop thinking about, and it actually sets up the next phase of this architecture.
Okay, what is it?
Chapter 4 teases the Files API. This handles the document layer, the ability to upload massive, heavy data files into the environment once and have the agent continuously reference them across a long-running session without re-uploading. But the documentation explicitly describes the billing model for this Files API as counterintuitive.
Huh. Counterintuitive is a very deliberate word choice for a technical blueprint.
Right. It doesn't say the billing model is expensive. It doesn't say it's highly optimized. It says it runs contrary to standard intuition. So here is a final thought for you to dissect as you start architecting your own multi-server agents. If you only have to pay the computational cost to upload and embed a massive document once and can then query it repeatedly over an extended timeline, how might a counterintuitive billing structure completely invert the way you design long-running autonomous workflows?
That's a fascinating question.
What hidden latency costs or massive unexpected financial savings are mathematically baked into that architectural choice? Is the standard cloud computing model of spinning up temporary stateless instances actually more expensive than keeping an intelligent agent alive indefinitely?
Oh, wow. That really makes you think.
I will leave you to explore that architectural mystery on your own. But for now, you have the exact blueprint required to construct the pipes, define the security constraints, and unleash your AI across the entire digital ecosystem. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.